This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will. He's Jake.
You can follow us on Twitter at Will Pruitt and at Barnett Jake.
On today's show, Will and Jake preview WWE Payback and discuss the overall state of the Raw brand. If you enjoy the ProWrestling.net All Access podcast, make sure you rate and review us in Apple Podcasts, which is apparently what they call iTunes now. Also, if you want more of the best in pro wrestling coverage online, make sure to become a ProWrestling.net member for as low as $5.50 a month if you take the annual option, or $7.50 if you just want to try it out for a month. You can get ad-free access to ProWrestling.net reviews of every major wrestling TV show and the ProWrestling.net weekly audio show where Jason Powell often breaks first-run news with a guest of his choice. Also, be sure to tune in on Monday after Payback for myself, Will Pruitt, and Jason Powell taking your calls on ProWrestling.net Live. All this and more, you can find the details on at ProWrestling.net. So, Jake, I'm flying into Las Vegas on Monday morning, like early morning flight, and I catch a glimpse of the phone of the person next to me. Like, it lights up as, like, my eyes are off of my Kindle or whatever. And I see that the person next to me is listening to wrestling podcasts. And I think, oh, that's cool. Continue going about my business because I'm not going to be a creeper and ask them about it. Then I see their phone light up another time. Jake, they're listening to the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. I'm sitting on a plane next to a person listening to you and me talk, and that was a little surreal, and at a certain point, I decided that I needed to speak up and at least say, hi, you're listening to me right now. How's your day?
It was really neat, though. Was that like an out-of-body experience at some point? Like,
it was very strange. I assume no one listens to this show, so to actually have someone listen to this show sitting next to me was kind of weird.
What did somebody outside of the little echo chamber we have here have to say about it?
he said he liked it. He said he dug the show and dug what you and I have done for years. And he's a very nice human. He actually, if .NET members remember the Millennials with Attitude podcast that Zach Zimmerman, my wife, and I did, he composed the theme music that we used on that was a crappy like version of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers theme. He did some great work making that. So
you call it a crappy version, yeah. But it was great work.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. I think like bad Photoshop is an art as well. I am proficient in really bad Photoshop. It takes me like 45 minutes to make something that looks like it took 3 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. The crude MS Paint stuff can be very funny too.
Yeah. So that was cool. Shout out to listener Chris in Southern California, who was going to the same conference as me. And I saw on my flight home the next day as well, a nice person. And it was great to get to chat with you a little bit. But so, Jake, do you feel more responsibility now that there's like proof that someone's listening to this show other than us?
A little bit. I gotta up my game slightly as a result of this, but I'm happy to hear that somebody out there is getting a kick out of this.
So today we are talking about WWE Payback, and rather than go through the standard here's a match, let's talk about it route, I think WWE Payback, actually you suggested WWE Payback. I don't know why I said I think. I'm stealing your ideas, Jake.
It's okay. It happens all the time.
Wow. That was some really great shade.
That was brutal. Man. I'm sorry. I should not have gone that far.
Ooh, I'm like I'm turning like bright red from that burn. It's my whole body.
I'm sure you'll get me back. It's okay.
So rather than talk about Payback match by match, let's talk about what Payback says about the overall state of Monday Night Raw.
At this point, I think it says that they really have no idea what they're doing. They have a lot of carryover. They have Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt on this show. They have Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho on this show. And then they have Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns on this show. It really, and none of these feuds feel as important as they should. And maybe you could say Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho and the rematch between Orton and Wyatt are just kind of carryovers that, you know, they didn't really feel like they finished all their business at WrestleMania, but they really don't feel that important. And it's not like they're carrying this show. And so it almost feels kind of superfluous because Chris Jericho is on his way out. And so I think a lot of people have kind of caught on that there's the outcome of that match really isn't in question. And Orton and Wyatt isn't even for the WWE Championship. And it's going to be another gimmick match that is rumored to be significantly pre-taped and only a portion of it will actually take place live in the arena. And then you have, you know, a bunch of feuds that just haven't gelled. You know, Seth Rollins and Samoa Joe just kind of feels like it's there. Bayley and Alexa Bliss was just kind of thrown together very quickly, and I don't think the promo work was that good. You know, Seth Rollins and Samoa Joe, I mean, am I supposed to be super excited about either of those guys at this point? Samoa Joe's kind of felt like an afterthought since they decided that Braun Strowman was going to be the lead heel on the show. And Seth Rollins, while I have enjoyed watching him, you know, sort of mature into a better babyface, I still don't think he's really like next level. He's just kind of at the point now where he's sort of picking up the crowd cues and knowing the right, you know, verbiage to say at the right time and getting the kind of react. He's just in the beginning stages of that. And then you have Strowman and Reigns, which started out fantastic with that angle and then has just kind of petered into the show. And some of that has to do with, you know, the absence of Roman Reigns as a result of his brother's untimely passing, but they really haven't done a great job of even covering for him in his absence. It's not like they've made him into this sympathetic figure or even somebody that, you know, deserves payback at the show. So it's kind of a bizarre set of circumstances here. I'm hesitating to think of why anyone would like really go out of their way to invest 3-4 hours into this show. If you watch the pre-show, it's a tough sell.
That it is. I don't think the show overall looks bad, but I do think it's kind of damning when you look at the state of Raw. And you caught my attention as you talked about Seth Rollins and Samoa Joe. Seth Rollins, hot promo on the Superstar Shakeup show, seems to kind of be getting his feet under him as a babyface in a big way. But they have cooled down Joe so much since he arrived. And then Joe cutting promos, not saying, Seth, I'm going to get you, but cutting promos essentially about Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, that has harmed Joe. Like, yes, he's the heavy. Yes, he's the hired gun. And I think his motivation is clear and fine. But I don't think he needs to be saying, I'm going to get revenge on you for Stephanie McMahon. He can be saying, Seth, I'm going to take you out. I'm going to put you out of action again, because I think Joe is a much stronger wrestler when he's just trying to hurt people, not when he's sucking up to the boss. Heel or babyface, I think that's a really weak place to put him in. And it's kind of the place Rollins was in for a long time, where, yes, Rollins was WWE champion, but every promo was about how Stephanie and Triple H believed in him and how great they were. And Rollins was there as both a babyface and a heel for too long. And I hope that Joe doesn't end up in that same place. And for that reason, I hope this feud ends soon. And honestly, I don't know who I want to win this feud. You also see, you know, Owens and Jericho. Okay, well, it's the end. It's kind of limped to this finish line and it'll be okay. Orton and Wyatt, again, a feud limping to the finish line and a really inconsequential match that, I don't know about you, Jake. It might be the match I'm dreading the most. I don't see it being good. Nothing about the Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt feud outside of the ring has been good. They're talking about going to a house. What? Randy Orton commits arson again? Bray Wyatt gives himself the old ash rub down in real time? And then eventually they go to the ring and something happens? They put the projectors back up? I don't know what they do here. But I don't see Orton and Wyatt to be especially compelling. And then again, you mentioned the problems with Reigns and Strowman and kind of covered them expertly. Jake, what's missing here is a main event. What's missing here is a match that you know is a top match. I am not someone who says you always need a title match or you need something like that. But I look at this show and I look at Payback itself and I look at the Monday Night Raw show and you know, your Universal Champion hasn't been around since the night after WrestleMania. There was no excuse given for him to be gone. He just left and disappeared. The title's an afterthought on the show now, and I believe it's really hurting this show the way, if you look after summer 2014 when Brock went away until WrestleMania 31, that show, or until the Rumble, the Night of Champions through the Rumble stretch in 2014 was really rough and hard to get through on for WWE's programming. And I think Raw could be entering another stretch like that. And hopefully they have Lesnar for more pay-per-views than just SummerSlam coming up, because I think one of the main weaknesses here is what's everyone fighting for? What are people actually angling towards without the champion around and defending his title?
That's tough. I mean, you have the, you know, Seth Rollins and Samoa Joe, neither one of them are talking about becoming the Universal Champion. You have Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman, who are not talking about becoming the Universal Champion. And, you know, you have, as you said, Lesnar not appearing. You have the U.S. Championship match that's heavily reliant on a SmackDown star to fill that gap. You have Finn Balor, who's going to be on Miz TV. You have Dean Ambrose, the Intercontinental Champion, who's not even advertised for the show in any capacity at all. It's a very weird creative period on Raw right now, and it almost feels like they're waiting until after this show to really rev up the engines, as it were, in terms of what they have planned for the rest of the summer, you know, heading into SummerSlam. And I hope it's something interesting. You know, if Lesnar's not going to be around, they're going to need a big angle that involves a lot of talent to sort of fill the gaps that not having a primary champion is going to leave, you know. And I'm not sure what that looks like. I mean, Jason and I talked about, you know, a potential Shield reunion on .NET Weekly up against some kind of heel faction that could emerge from this show and really pose a threat to the rest of the roster. And that would be kind of interesting, but it's really difficult to formulate who that would be and how they would suddenly become important enough to warrant having, you know, your three biggest baby faces somehow come together. And so it's a difficult thing to sort of figure out, you know, what does Raw look like after Sunday? And it's a complete mystery to me.
Yeah, I was listening to .NET Weekly with you and Jason Powell. The .NET members exclusively are listening to or have listened to before they listen to this show. And I heard you and Jason talk about that Shield reunion, and I was trying to piece together the three heels, or, you know, the three wrestlers that could form a group or form kind of an alliance strong enough for the Shield to take on, and I couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't think of who those three wrestlers are. And, you know, maybe they say screw it, and it is a less than compelling threesome of wrestlers. Maybe it is a, you know, I mean, what, you do Wyatt Strowman and someone? Do you do Cesaro and Sheamus and someone? Does broken Matt Hardy, you know, does Matt Hardy break and then recruit a couple wrestlers? I'm not quite sure what you could do. Are Gallows and Anderson involved? I think you mentioned the club, kind of a Finn Balor, Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson situation. But I don't think they want Finn to be anything but kind of a white meat baby face. So I'm not sure that works. With all of that, I can't see it, but I truly believe that they're angling towards a Shield reunion this summer. So do you just put together a weak group or what?
You know, I think Jason had the best idea there in that you have Triple H, who is going to want to get one back at Seth Rollins. He is going to, you know, he still owes one to Roman Reigns, as it were, from their championship match at WrestleMania over a year ago now. I mean, I guess, you know, if he were to put together a faction of guys, and whether it included, you know, I'm assuming Samoa Joe would be a part of that because he's sort of already in that in that group with the McMahons. But it seems like there would be, you know, a good foundation for it there. But I just don't see Triple H and Stephanie appearing on television to kind of give it the launch that it would deserve. And so I'm really not sure. I guess, you know, the more I think about it, it's like, well, if you actually were putting together the Broken Hardys, would it make sense to add Bray Wyatt there and have him become a part of that somehow, or, you know, integrate him into that universe and try to make, you know, that type of faction a counterpoint for a Shield reunion? I don't know. But, I
and
mean,
if you did that, I mean, sorry to interrupt you, but if you wouldn't you, it wouldn't be the standard Shield six man that people got so accustomed to. It would be a Final Deletion or Total Nonstop Deletion style match people would look forward to then. And you don't need the Shield together to do that. You could do that with anyone. Like, you know, when WWE decides to film at the Hardys compound, it's going to be huge. Like, people are going to get really excited about it. Don't use the Shield for that. Use Gallows and Anderson or Enzo and Cass. Like, use lesser teams. Don't put together the super team that you kind of have to pull out of your bag of tricks when you really need it.
Yeah, it's a tough one because it doesn't really seem to fit. Like, you would think the Hardys, if they embrace their old if they gain back the access to that gimmick, you know, would they just make sense, you know, lording over the tag division and being completely unstoppable there? Or, you know, do they plan on splitting them off into also competing as singles wrestlers? And, you know, what does that mean? What does it look like? Because, I mean, I'm with you. Like, just putting together, three guys that make sense to unite against the Shield, it's tough to do because you're either in a position where you have to pull three guys away from potential singles feuds to do it, or, you know, you have to make guys who, like Gallows and Anderson or something, who haven't been treated with much importance, suddenly feel very important in a short period of time. And WWE doesn't do that particularly well, and they haven't shown much of a knack for doing it recently. And so I don't know. I don't know how you make that work, but I think there is real potential in a Shield reunion, but it almost feels like they have to bring people in to do it.
So Reigns versus Strowman. I see Braun Strowman winning it because I think they are leading to Strowman and Reigns, but how do you have Roman Reigns get flipped over in an ambulance, tossed off a loading dock, and have his brother die and not give him the feel-good victory here? That, you know, he's essentially having the no-good, very bad month. I think this is one that Reigns has to win, even though I don't believe it makes sense for WWE stories going forward.
I think you have him get a moral victory despite not winning the match.
And this is just a straightforward match, correct? Like, they haven't.
It's a singles match. That's why, I mean, okay.
There's not like a stretcher. There's not a
no ambulance. No phone booth at the top of the ramp. Nothing. So, honestly, have him, crack under the stress of his life and freak out when he can't, put Strowman away and cost himself the match. And then you have him sort of go on a different journey because you're going to want Strowman to get the first crack at Lesnar, I would think, because I think that's what's at stake here, right? They're going after a championship match. It would seem one of these two is going to be in line for Lesnar at some point. And so, I don't think you want to put Reigns in that position right now. And so Strowman makes sense to me. I mean, he's a monster. He looks unstoppable. You've shown him on television brutalizing anybody and everybody. And Reigns somehow finding a way to get a moral victory, but still losing and sending Strowman off, onto the next thing makes the most sense to me.
And maybe you have Strowman eventually just win a number one contender's battle royal by destroying a bunch of people or something too. Like, that way both guys can move on and you have a reason for Strowman to be a number one contender and hopefully get his title match at the next Raw pay-per-view and not at SummerSlam, because that is way too long to wait. Speaking of too long to wait, how long do you think we're going to have Sasha out there talking for Bayley instead of Bayley getting to cut promos herself? Because to echo another point you and Jason were discussing today, I find myself not as compelled by the Bailey character as I once was, and definitely not as compelled as I was when she was at her height in NXT. And along with all of the wrong turns, there's just a weirdness to the Sasha and Bailey dynamic that is even making what should be the most straightforward feud of arguably the best heel woman in WWE today in Alexa Bliss, especially on the mic, against the pure baby face of the division in Bailey. Like, this should be a slam dunk, easy program to build. Give them a week, give them a promo, and you're out of there. And this didn't click for me on Monday. And I look at it in Bailey's hometown and I think she wins, but right now I just look at this whole feud and I'm not super psyched about it.
I think you get the title off of Bailey now, honestly. It pains me to say, you know, that I want to see her hit the reset button, but I think it's really necessary at this point. And maybe you can split her off and do a feud with, you know, with Sasha for the short term to kind of help her find a character. You know, having a best friend betray you in some way is generally a good way to focus somebody on a goal, because to me that's where the character has fallen flat. They rushed her into the position where she was a champion. She found success far too soon. They did not tell the arc correctly, and so, you know, there wasn't any struggle for her to reach her dreams. And now, you know, they have her going out there and still talking about the same dream from when she was 12 of becoming a champion at WWE. Well, you are the champion, so who are you now, and what is your next goal? You know, it feels stale to send her out there and have her talk about the same stuff week after week. So they need to get the championship away from her and onto a character that really seems to be in the zone right now, and that's Alexa Bliss. And then they can figure out where the dominoes fall from there.
And I would say one of the hard things with any character like that is who do they become once they succeed? Who do they become when they win? And that was something WWE had issues with Shawn Michaels when he achieved the boyhood dream in 1996. They always needed an overarching villain to go against Stone Cold when he was champion in the late 90s in Mr. McMahon. They never quite... WWE, for all of it being a babyface territory that builds up monsters for its big babyface heroes to tear down for so many years, has never been great in the modern era at actually doing just that, at making sure that those baby faces have someone to tear down and go against. And that's something that we see right now with Bailey. They're not telling Act Two of her story well. They're not giving her adversity as champion, or giving her champions, or giving her challenges that she has to live up to. And that's becoming a really challenging aspect of her character. And I'm kind of with you in getting the title off of Bailey, but at the same time, Sasha versus Bailey is still the money match to me. That's still what WWE should be building towards. And I think you still need a heel Sasha turning on Bailey to get that. And I think that match is a SummerSlam match. I could see them wanting to do that match in Brooklyn again. I don't know. It's a really weird situation there in the Raw women's division.
Yeah, they really haven't succeeded with many of the characters. I mean, you have...
Sasha's a wreck, for one.
Sasha makes no sense. I mean, and she's so much better as a heel, but...
Her promos are so bad now, too.
Yeah. As a babyface, it's difficult to watch because she has so many heel tendencies that she hasn't shaken off as a babyface character, that it's kind of confusing to listen to her talk at times, because she cops the same kind of mannerisms and attitude that she had as a heel. And it just kind of sends your brain in different directions. You know, you have Emma, who they reintroduced, and then suddenly they just have her involved with, you know, recruiting her old protege Dana Brooke, and that, you know, that's kind of fallen apart because Dana's not, I mean, I don't know, maybe you have a different impression of Dana, but she seems kind of clunky in the ring to me and kind of a mess as a character. And so it's hard to watch those segments too. And I mean, who is Mickie James at this point? You know, like they've really, you know, they brought her in and there was a lot of fanfare around it because of her return and how decorated she was, and they just haven't given her anything interesting to do. And it's really tough for me because I think there's so much talent in this division, and yet it seems like all the characters are in the wrong place.
Yeah, it's a really weird situation there. It's a really depressing situation there in a lot of ways because there is so much talent in the division and there are so many really dynamic and great characters that aren't being used correctly. And I think that's, as we get to the overarching theme of this, there is a wealth of talent on Raw. Even guys that certainly seem more talented than they did to me a year ago, when you talk about like a Braun Strowman on this show, or wrestlers that I think are being used to their full or very near to full potential, like Neville on this show. But overall, I think this show is a lot of really great wrestlers, really good characters being used in bad situations. And I look at it as a complete matchmaking issue, a complete just storytelling issue, where even if the characters are good, the stories that they're in are not. Braun Strowman is a key example of that. Yeah, Braun Strowman is a fantastic professional wrestler. He's a really good character. He's not in a compelling story with Roman Reigns right now, and people aren't into it. So divert from it. Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt, two talents who mean so much more than the sum of their parts, whether or not they are inside of a house of horrors. You know, even Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho, I think, are they're recycling a feud that people don't really want or need to revisit, and it feels like just kind of a placeholder, another match on the show. You add in on this show, Dean Ambrose, The Miz, and Finn Balor all don't have matches, and you're talking about compelling upper mid-card talents there in the three of those. And you're looking at a Monday Night Raw show that misuses talent to the extreme. A Monday Night Raw show also suffering from the effects of pushing almost half the people on this show down the card to the non-main event realm, to the Battle Royal realm, so they could have Goldberg and Undertaker in their main events at WrestleMania, and Brock Lesnar for that matter. And you're seeing what happens when you take those part-time guys away and what the show feels like. I think Raw is a show in creative disarray, just trying to stumble through three hours and 15 minutes every week of compelling content, and really, really failing at it.
Yeah, I would agree. I guess it's too soon to really cast judgment as to where this show will be.
It could be a really good wrestling show
around SummerSlam. You know, if you looked at the roster just on paper from Raw, and you just like go to Wikipedia, you know, people listening to this, and just read off that roster in your head, and you're like, man, if you know, if you had this in your, you know, your fantasy wrestling booking, you know, software or whatever you want to call it, you would think you were just it's an embarrassment of riches in terms of talent, and they really have not turn that into something watchable on a weekly basis. And it's stunning. I mean, it's absolutely stunning that, you know, the show they put out with the amount of talent that they have.
So much less than the sum of its parts.
Disposal. Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, it seems like if, you know, if they could just maneuver a few things, you know, out of the way, you know, they would succeed wildly. And if they could, you know, tweak a few characters in the women's division, if they could, you know,
establish a couple characters in the women's division. Yeah. Why is Alexa Bliss versus Bayley the only women's match on this show when you do have Nia Jax, you have Mickey James, you have Sasha Banks, just and Alicia Fox even just hanging out in the back? Like, well, why would you not use those four women in some way?
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the pre-show, and it's like we're getting Enzo and Cass versus Gallows and Anderson, number 557. You know, I don't understand how, you know, we continue to get even Steven booking matches all over these cards when there's, you know, there's so much raw talent at the disposal of these creative types. It's just, you know, if they weren't so obsessed with getting a couple of characters over, you know, namely Roman Reigns and and the remainder of like the Shield guys, like they're even Rollins can be put into that category. I mean, if they would move a couple of them into positions where I think they would be more effective. I mean, this show clears out and becomes a lot better, especially if you could, you know, move somebody like a Finn Balor or, you know, even a Dean Ambrose who would feel fresh at the top of the Raw show. You know, there's a lot of feuds that could suddenly fall into place and be kind of fun. But rather than doing that, we're continually watching the same superstars succeed, you know, sometimes at the, you know, in counter to what the audience is responding to. And it's kind of strange to me. I mean, Strowman is the runaway success story of this show post WrestleMania. And it seems like the past couple of weeks they've did all they could to sort of take the wind out of his sails. And then that's been really bizarre and unfortunate to watch, especially what we saw on Monday with Kalisto. You know, they had one final attempt to sort of push him into Payback as being this unstoppable monster that Reigns would never be able to compete with, and it just came across exceptionally poorly. So I'm really negative on Payback at this point in terms of on paper how I feel about the show creatively. I have no doubt that there will be some great performances in the ring on the Payback show, and I'm sure it'll end up satisfying most of the people watching, but it's a wasteland from a creative standpoint.
So coming out of this show, what's the main event of WWE Extreme Rules in, I think, 6 weeks or 7 weeks? It's another Raw brand pay-per-view. What do you see being the big match on that show?
I honestly have no idea. I'm assuming it's going to be Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar, but I really have no confidence in picking that because I don't know whether Brock Lesnar is going to be around, you know, if they're going to choose Extreme Rules as one of his appearances, because it doesn't seem like he has that many. I think when he renegotiated his deal, he wants to have, you know, a limited number of pay-per-view appearances. And I think they're going to save that for the bigger shows.
Yeah, I would really love for Extreme Rules to feature Brock Lesnar against Braun Strowman. I think that's the right time and kind of the right place. I'm actually trying to look for the arena website right now. I see I'm bringing up the Ticketmaster listing to try and see if I can figure out where or who is advertised for this show. And I'm not, I'm having some trouble actually even finding it, which isn't a positive thing.
I think Extreme Rules is a good place for, you know, to really, you know, go heavy with Finn Balor as well. The Demon would be a good, you know, candidate for having an Extreme Rules match. Or, you know, if they have the Broken Hardy thing resolved with Anthem Impact, you know, that would be a very good place to sort of debut those characters, you know, because their mayhem style really fits, you know, an Extreme Rules show. But, you know, honestly, you know, I don't know, because the stories, you know, seem to be reaching a point where they're just going to have to hit the reset button on a lot of stuff, and how that ends up, you know, after 6 weeks of television is anybody's guess.
And luckily they do have enough time to kind of go through the first round of a couple matches on Raw and build to the Extreme Rules rematch should they want to build it up that way. But I'm going to predict, as the Extreme Rules main event, I'm going to go with the old standby, Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman. I think they will have an Extreme Rules match against each other. How's that for bold?
That's not as bold as it would appear. Because they're having a singles match at this show. And that usually, you know, gives them plenty of wiggle room for some kind of non-finish. And so I would not be shocked in the least to see them, you know, go with a non-finish on Sunday at Payback and then, you know, gear up for an Extreme Rules match, you know, because it does make a lot of sense. I do find it somewhat comical that they had this match at, you know, I guess, was it the pay-per-view directly before
Fastlane.
WrestleMania? Fastlane.
The one,
and then they kind of interrupted everything to have the Taker feud, and then now they're just right back to business as usual with these two. So it really does feel like WrestleMania is an entity unto itself at this point.
That's one of the stranger things about WrestleMania at this moment, is just how outside of storylines it seems sometime. But hey, it gave me a great Shane McMahon match this year, and I will take that above most things. Jake, finally, last question. What's making you happy in wrestling this week?
I am really enjoying watching evolution of what's happening with SmackDown. As an observer, just because I think the whole quote-unquote land of opportunity thing is really going to be put to the test in the coming months, because it does feel like they're relying on the old standbys to get them through while they have new talent waiting in the wings. And so, you know, how this Jinder Mahal thing is going to shake out really intrigues me. How they're going to rebuild this women's division around Charlotte really intrigues me. You know, how they're going to make Breezango feel like they're competitive against the Usos really intrigues me. So I'm happy that, that at least one of the WWE shows feels like it's trying something experimental, even if it's not immediately working.
And I totally get that. I actually find myself enjoying SmackDown a lot as well. What's making me happy currently is actually another wrestling podcast. The Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling podcast had me outright guffawing multiple times at work today. If people aren't listening, it's Marty DeRosa, comedian who is heavily involved in wrestling, buddy of Colt Cabana, and his buddy Sarah, and they talk about wrestling. It's kind of an improvisational comedy wrestling podcast, and really, really enjoyable. So if anyone is listening to this that doesn't listen to Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling and is tired of dry, droll, two bros sit down and sit about wrestling podcasts, Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling is seriously where you want to go. With that, folks, I think we will wrap it up for this week. Anything to add, Jake?
No, man. I think we got through it.
All right. Talk to y'all next week. Thank you for listening to this ProWrestling.net podcast. For more, make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, hit us up with a rating, and tell your friends. Also, please check out the goodness of ProWrestling.net membership. Bye.